Welcome to Beauty and the Brain with your hosts, Dr. Chris Crowley and nurse practitioner Jerry Drinkard. Get ready to dive into the latest in revolutionary treatments, cutting-edge devices, and wellness secrets. Whether you're a consumer or provider, we're here to empower you at the forefront of beauty and aesthetics.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Beauty and the Brain. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner, and Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, Med Spa office located here in Pace, Florida. Today, we're joined by Allie Ballou, our other nurse practitioner that's here in the clinic, and Allie's been with us on lots and lots of the podcast now.
She even did one by herself with Sierra.
Yeah,
her and Sierra did a podcast totally by herself without us. Yeah, that was out a few weeks ago. Oh, we need to listen to it.
I need to watch it. Sierra, we can watch it tonight.
I usually don't listen to them because I don't like to hear my voice.
You know, I don't like my ass.
But I will listen to Allie and Sierra. I do need to go back and do that. I just thought about it. So we're going to do something kind of fun today, something that we haven't really done before. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. We'll see. Stay tuned. Allie's going to pick a topic just off the top of her head that we don't know and we haven't even discussed. And she's going to tell us what we're going to talk about. Allie?
You said Jerry was picking a topic.
Jerry, you want to pick the topic?
Yeah, let's talk about Allie.
Let's talk about Allie.
I actually think that's a fun topic because I think it's something that a lot of people, I think it's a fun topic.
We're looking off camera at Sierra. She's here with us too, and Danny.
So let's talk about Allie and from the time she started here until where she is now and the different challenges that she's had being a new injector coming from a hospital setting to where she is now, and the different personalities she's seen, and the different techniques that she's learned while she's been here. It's like a hodgepodge. That covers like every podcast we've talked about.
I don't know. Let's back it up even further. Let's talk about Allie when she finished nursing school. Or Allie going to nursing school.
Let's talk about Allie
school.
In college.
Yeah, let's talk about Allie in college. I think everybody wants to hear about
Where's
that.
Where's Miss Karen Leon when we need her? She'll probably want to hear this.
Actually, we need Rhonda on here if we're going to talk about that.
No, probably not.
Yeah, so Rhonda's Allie's mom. We love her as well. So
Allie, what made you decide to go to nursing school?
Oh, it's not a sweet story. most of my patients, I feel like, know that I'm from Bruton, which is a really, really small town. It's a small, sweet town. No shame to Bruton, but I was really ready to get out of Bruton, and the plan was for me to go to community college for a year first to save my parents some money. And I couldn't wait to get out. Like, I was itching to get out, and I knew I wanted to go to Alabama. And so they were like, we'll go tour. And when we toured, their nursing school is very prestigious, and the way that it works out, you basically don't have a chance to get accepted into upper division nursing at Alabama if you don't take majority of your first 2 years, your basics there. And so it basically knocks you out of being able to go to like an easier community college and take those classes and then get into nursing school over people who have taken classes at Alabama, I guess. And so I was like, I want to be a nurse. I always knew I wanted to be medical, though. I actually always wanted to be a dentist. That was what I always wanted to do. I love teeth, and that was always a passion of mine. I was like, I'll be a dentist. I was going to be very smart. I was going to be an engineer, and then I was going to go to dentistry school with my engineer degree. In case I was tired of school, I would still have a good job. But then once I heard I could get out of Bruton first chance, then I said, I'll be a nurse.
Anybody in the family a nurse?
No.
Engineer?
No.
No.
Well, my grandfather worked at the paper mill. Both of my grandfathers did, actually. And so they were like, oh, yeah, you can get a chemical engineering degree, and girls with chemical engineering degrees are rare, so you'll get a job. And I was like, okay.
I'm going to tell you a quick, funny dentist story, and then we'll get right back on track. But a lot of people have heard me talk about Aubrey, my oldest sister, and she's my oldest sister, but she's 4 years younger than I am. And she's always wanted to be a dentist since she was like little girl, like 3 years old. So my mom had a daycare center, and Aubrey happened to pull one of the kids that came in, like had a loose tooth, and Aubrey helped them pull their tooth. So a few weeks later, another kid comes in and had a loose tooth. Well, dentist to be Aubrey, who's probably seven, helped them pull their tooth.
This
the parents, like, it kind of was a joke. Well, this other kid came in and she had a few, and so Aubrey pulled four of her teeth one day while she was in daycare. And so her mom asked her to please stop. And that kind of ended Aubrey's dental career. Isn't that a fun Aubrey story?
And she's the one that went away from medical altogether and went to be a teacher.
She's a teacher.
Yeah. Your other sister.
We just had this conversation this weekend. She said that she loves teaching, but if she had to choose a career, she'd be a dentist. She missed her calling.
The person who actually pulled the majority of my teeth as a child was my dance teacher. She loved pulling teeth. And so if she ever caught wind that one of us had a loose tooth, she would snatch you up, take you to the bathroom, and she would yank that tooth out, and you couldn't dance until it was out.
Lord.
It was awful.
Only in Bruton.
Bruton and Thomasville.
Bruton, Thomasville, the small Alabama town.
Send your kid to daycare, they come home with no teeth.
So when you started actually having to take nursing classes and do clinicals, did you think, what did I get into?
Kind of. Nursing school is hard, like really hard. I remember the hardest class I ever took was fundamentals. And like, it would probably be the stupidest class in the world going back and taking it now. But it was just, I think it was so much information. And I remember going to nursing school with this girl, and she had been working as a tech in the ER in Tuscaloosa. And she knew everything. And I was like, oh, must be nice. Like, I feel like a fish out of water because I just knew nothing medical. And I think a lot of high schools, like bigger high schools, have like kind of like tracks that you can pick. And so if you're like, oh, like, I know I want to do something in the medical field, they have extracurricular classes that you can take that have to do with that. And I didn't have any exposure to anything. And so my first clinical, I learned so much. My first clinical was actually, I was spoiled. I got to go to an LTAC for my first clinical, whereas most people are on med-surg floors. And so seeing all the tubes and lines and drains and everything like that, I was like, I hit the jackpot. But it was also, you had to get a thick stomach really fast too.
So LTAC, you want to tell people what an LTAC is for those that are not in the medical field.
So like long-term acute care.
So kind of like a little bit like ICU, but long-term. So it's not,
it's like a nursing home for
sicker patients. Yeah. A nursing home for intense patients. So they need a more intensive care, but not really acute ICU. So yeah. So you did get to see a lot of
stable sick patients, but still sick. Yeah.
So is that what drew you to the ICU? Because when I first met you, you're an ICU nurse.
Probably so. I think that really got me into critical care. And I actually, one of my favorite rotations in nursing school was OB. I loved, it was like the running joke that every time I went to OB clinical, even if I was supposed to be with a nurse that was on postpartum duty or like, because they would be like, Allie saw a delivery last time. Like, you have to go with a postpartum nurse. And then there would be some random girl rushing the hallway and we would have to deliver a baby. And they were like, you're meant to be a baby nurse. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. There's a baby here born every time you're here. And I did love it. And then people scared me into, if you do baby nursing, you'll never do anything else because you're going to love it so much. And I was scared to get stuck. And I was like, I don't, like, I want to be able to, like, learn good clinical skills. And I don't want to be just in one small section of the hospital and not know anything about anything else. And so I did ICU instead, which is where I did my preceptorship, was in a neurosurgical ICU, and got offered a job there. And then I've never left the ICU. So I did exactly what I was trying to avoid.
Now, and somehow you landed in aesthetics, but it wasn't anywhere on your radar screen.
No. I didn't even know that I needed aesthetic treatment until I met Dr. Crowley. He's like, you should let Jerry do your Botox. I was like, what?
Botox?
I need Botox.
And look at you now.
Look at me now.
So in the ICU, I knew you there and you were a phenomenal bedside nurse. The patients' families loved you. The physicians loved working with you. You're really attentive to the patients and details. So when you were thinking about switching, because this was your first NP job, was here. So you went to nurse practitioner school while you worked as an ICU nurse. So was it scary to think about like jumping out of the area that you were so comfortable with and that you had done? No, you're tired of it.
I couldn't wait.
You couldn't
mind wait. You, I was in NP school during COVID and the COVID ICU. And I think I couldn't, like, I always thought, because when I went back to NP school, I went for adult gerontology acute care thinking, I'll always be in the hospital. I don't ever want an office job. Like, I want to be where the action is. I want my brain stimulated. Like, I need things to do, you know? I want to be busy. And then COVID happened. And I was like, this sucks. Like, this is hard. This is sad. This is a lot. And I think after that, I was like, I couldn't wait to get out of the hospital. And I don't think that any office job, though, would have been a good fit for me. Like, I think it was just because it was this. And like, I knew you and I knew Jerry. And so I was excited. I was nervous, of course, because I was like, what if I'm just terrible at it? Because like, how do you know if you're going to be good at something that you've never done before? But I think that part was scary because I didn't want to disappoint you. I'll never forget. I was driving to take boards for my NP license and I had to drive to Mobile to take my test. And you texted me when I was on my way driving there. So it like reads through my car. And it was like, yeah, a text from Dr. Chris Crowley. And it was like, good luck. Like, we know, me and Jerry know you're going to do great. Let me know how it goes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I got sick. I had to stop and use the restroom because I was like, I'm going to be sick. And then I was like, I should have never told anybody when I was taking this stupid test.
I have to tell them that I failed.
I'm going to tell them that I failed. They're going to tell me we don't want you to work there anymore. Like, because you had offered me kind of the job before I had my license. And I was like, this is a bad decision. I should have never told anybody I was taking it today. And then, of course, when I took my test, my screen went black. At the end of it, it didn't say pass or fail like it was supposed to. And I was like, that can't be a good sign. And then I got my phone out of my locker and I had an email that I passed. Biggest relief of my life.
Well, it's interesting because we didn't, and we debated for a long time about bringing on another NP or an injector at all. We've obviously been fairly protective of the brand. It took us years to build it ourselves and to kind of grow it. And it was our own thing. And so to like invite someone else, but we did have a very good feeling about you from the beginning. And I was like, yeah, this is not something, because you didn't actually apply in the traditional manner. We didn't like go out and advertise and recruit. We had talked about it. And I said, hey, you knew Jerry by that point, and we had talked about you finishing school. You were really looking for an ICU job initially, and the hospital just didn't come off the budget. It wasn't in the plans at that moment. And it's like, well, what am I going to do? And you're looking at all these other jobs, and the stars kind of just aligned, I think. And certainly we've enjoyed having you here. Hopefully you've enjoyed being here, but maybe talk to people a little bit, the people out there listening that perceive this as a really, I don't want to say a hard job, because I think when you love what you're doing, it doesn't make it necessarily hard, but it's not easy. It's not like you put all that training into it and then you just forget all your medical knowledge. So was this more challenging, as challenging, or less challenging than what you thought when you switched from the ICU to aesthetics?
That's a good question. I don't know, because I thought it was going to be challenging. Like, I didn't think, Like I said, I was so scared. It was just going to be something that like you're either good or you're not, and you can't be trained into it. I remember you saying like, I can't wait to see like if you have like the eye for aesthetics. And I was like, God, is that something that like you're either born with or you don't have? And I think that was like where I got really caught up, was like, what if I don't know what looks good? Or I can remember us like assessing a patient when I first started, maybe me and you, and you're like, okay, where do you see, like, where would you do your next injection point? And I was like, I have no idea. And then now it makes me, I think, really relatable to my students when I teach now, because I'll say that to them and they're like looking at me like a deer in headlights, and I'm like, dude, I know exactly how you feel. But it does, like, I think it is something that is somewhat trainable for sure,
but it's still medicine.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of what's lost in it, because I probably say it every podcast of Beauty and the Brain, but nobody has to be here. So it is a different type of medicine, but you still have to have that medicine thought process, because with it, we see complications here. Some belong to us and some belong to other people, but you still deal with things that don't go exactly as planned, and you have to know how to deal with that. So you still have that critical thinking aspect that keeps you like in the medical mindset. And then, but I also think that you also throw back to your psych part of your nurse training, because there's so many people that are at such different stages of their life. Of course, we have some that come in that are 24 and just won't bigger lips. But then we also have some that come in that are going through the divorce. They're going, getting ready. They're having, you know, a daughter get married, or they're the mother of the groom. And so we see people at all different stages of their life. And to me, that's the, like, I love injecting, don't get me wrong. But to me, like, the probably the most fun part is the psych aspect of it. Like,
I enjoy it too. I think, like, I get so much more, like, person-to-person, like, connection and everything. And I think I miss that a lot in the ICU. Like, I thrive when my patient had a family that stayed in their room all day. But a lot of the patients we're taking care of are sedated or they're intubated. They can't talk to you. And so I'm like, I wish I could talk to them and communicate everything. Like, I would literally talk to my patients that were asleep because I'm like, maybe they can hear me. Like, who's to say, you know? And so I would always talk to my patients regardless, but being able to talk to, like, a family member and explain all the care that I'm giving for them and how much I care about their family member. We get to do that to our patients, like, on a daily basis. I had a having a patient that just, like, lost her job, just got a divorce and wants to feel confident again. Like, it's so much. You get to be that, like, just somebody to listen to, somebody to soundboard off of. And I think it helps them too. But it is exhausting. Like, I will say, like, when I went home from the ICU, my back hurt from turning 300, 400 pound patients. But then here, it's like you do get, like, I feel like I take on a lot of my patients' like emotions, you know, here.
So looking back, and this will be kind of, I think, interesting, all of our answers, because it's been, we're so much different time frames. So in the time that you've been doing this, so several years now, 3 or 4 years now, what has been the most challenging thing for you to learn?
Like a procedure?
Anything. The most challenging thing for you to learn in aesthetics in the time since you started till now?
Threads. Lifting threads.
Lifting threads.
Probably lifting threads, yeah. Because I feel like you can go, like, really, really well. And I've done some lifting threads that I'm like, woof, that was fire. Like, I'm doing these a million times. And then you have, like, one little, like, oh, they have to come back because there's, like, a little pull or something. And then you're like, oh, God, like, Now I've, like, just drained all of my confidence out that I built up from my previous patient. And so I think because of the variability of results, maybe, I would say threads.
And then you shy away from
it. Procedure-wise. And then I shy away from it. And then I'll, like, do a really great thread. And then I'll be like, I'm doing these all the time. And I go on, like, it's like a roller coaster for me with that.
Jerry, what about you?
The most difficult for me to learn has been the business aspect of it. And, probably because of kind of that, like, I feel like I'm really good at it and then I'll make some kind of big screw up and then, like, I'll do something and I think it's really good. And then I think I'm a little bit opposite. I'm a very opposite than Chris, because, like, if something happens that I'm not good at, like, I want to back away from it and figure out the path that I am good at. Chris is completely opposite, because I think very much the same thing. I don't think you were good at it either. And now you have drcrowley.com, you're advising people, you're a business consultant, you have all these things. And so you took what was, like, a weakness of both of ours, I think, especially mine, but, and have turned it into a completely different avenue of business. But I also, like, with, I'm going to answer a little bit for you. I remember with Chris, because we'll ask you this same exact question, but I remember the time when Chris almost refused to do lip injections, like, hated it. He's like, there's no way to get the lips right. And it was because of, like you said, with threads, it had.
Well, that's why I find it interesting to look at the different timestamps. And so for people listening, they're just starting, or for patients that see it and they watch us sometimes now, patients are new injectors. And I get this all the time when I'll put a thread or do some mid-face injection. They're like, oh my God, you made it look so easy. Even if I'm dying inside and wondering, like, is this going to go right? Like, I get tense every time I do, like, live injections or procedures and people are watching. But yeah, you're right. Like, I can remember lips was one of the most challenging things for me. But you would book them. And because when we moved, you couldn't inject until you finished your MP, and I would have to do all of them. And he would, like, stack up the schedule with lips. And I would want to die.
He would use, like, just be disgusted.
Like,
and
sick.
And he was good at it.
I wasn't great, I don't think. And I think I did more. It's the same thing, I faced it head on. But then also threads. Like, God knows I was not good at threads. And so I also talk about this a lot when I teach PDO threads. The very first class we ever took, we were in Las Vegas. And one of our good friends, she doesn't mind if I say it because she tells the story a lot, to Sandy. She came out to be a model. She's a flight attendant. So she met us in Vegas, was going to be a model. And we put these threads on her face. I put one, I think, almost through her mouth. Back at that point, we were using sharp needles and cannulas, and they were long. I broke several in her face, and we had to remove a couple that I pushed, and I got bunching in. So it was very traumatic for me and her. And I was like, I'm never doing this. She could hardly eat that week. I ended up putting her on a steroid dose pack and antibiotics. I thought she was getting a horrible infection from all the... And then she had great results. And she loved it. And she's like, you got to do more of these. And I'm like, there is no way I'm ever doing that again, ever. And it took me months to get over that in another class. And I went and took another class in New York, and it still wasn't easy. But like Jerry said, I am the type that's like, okay, if I'm not good at that, I'm going to like then face it until I can perfect it. And then sometimes I get bored with it, move on to something else. So we do that as part of the business now. We teach threads and we do threads. I did one this morning before we filmed the podcast, and they don't stress me out like they did at some point. So when we look at procedures, I think that that is very normal for new injectors. And depending on if they're going to work for somebody or have their own business, I think then they start putting all the pieces together. And at some point you can reflect on the business aspect. And I believe that inherently medical people are not stupid. They've had to go through some sort of advanced training. They have some intelligence, and we just don't spend time, and nobody teaches us any business aspects. Most of the time, many of us work for somebody that just gives us a paycheck, and we don't think anything about, like when I'm at the hospital, it doesn't go through my mind about what they're doing to run that hospital, the salaries and the support staff and everything. I just do a procedure, somehow I get a paycheck, and that's it. But then when you move and you kind of grow your practice, we were able to start scaling and growing. And at some point it was like, oh, we're actually making money at this. But then, and you remember, it scared me the first time. I'm like, oh, I think we overcharged somebody, because we actually, that was a very small scale. That was a Botox party. But now as we got this larger business, and I look at it, it's like there are multiple people's salaries, livelihoods that depend on the success of the business. And you and I would sleep over it. We talk about it, you know, late at night, because it's like, is this the right thing? Because if this fails, if this goes awry, it's not just us, and it's not just a vacation fund. It's other people's livelihood that will be impacted in some way. And then taking it to the next level is like, okay, we've got that pretty much down. We know that we can pretty much guarantee everybody's salary, but now how can we make it better? And looking at how to refine that and how to improve that and constantly grow, I think that's the most challenging aspect now. And so, you know, as we coach and talk to people, I got them through, try to all those stages, because it, what may look easy at some point to you, you'll have that perfected and you're going to have a new challenge in front of you. And so rather than running away from it, I think trying to continue to embrace it and improve it is what I like to coach. I know that's not what you like to do, but you do it. You say you don't like to, but you do it quietly. Yeah. You do it, and like, you don't say I'm struggling. You go and learn it. And then the next time you do it, it's really good. We've seen it when Allie picks podcast topics that we know nothing about. And we're like, oh, she's picked some random topic. How did she come up with that topic? And I'm like, I know nothing about it. And Jerry will come with the most random stats, facts. He doesn't tell us he's studying, but when he sees that a week or two before, he will get himself up to speed so fast and it will look effortless.
But you know, my biggest fear is looking like an idiot in front of somebody. And so, and my biggest fear for a skin and tonic is that, like, since it started with us, I still want it, I want it to be big and I want it to be successful, but I still want it to have that us feel. And because I think that's what made us grow so good. And as you add people and you add personalities, it's a little bit hard, because we know exactly, like, it was us three for a long time, and Sierra's just like, I mean, it was a core of us. And then when you add personalities, it takes people a while to adapt, to be able, and it takes patients a while to adapt to.
And us, I mean, even like, because we know, I mean, literally Sierra and Allie are like family, just like extended family. I mean, we really, I mean, I know that's not really how probably HR would say that you should view those relationships, but it is. It's like a big extended family, and it's hard as that kind of grows and shifts and changes. One of the things that we do here, and I know it's different, this is where you have to weigh out what is it that's your priorities and what stresses people out, what makes them happy. But you said this, Allie said this, I will tell you this, if you talk to us, we love the long-term relationships. It makes a great business model. It saves us from having to continue to, you know, throw this big net out there and spend thousands in marketing, get new people in. But more than that, we get a lot of enjoyment. We get a lot of like just personal satisfaction in getting to know our patients. And so when we look at those numbers, you know, they're national averages, and some of the business coaching aspect is saying, what are our goals? What are national averages? What do top performing med spas do? And we know what those numbers are, right? And as we look, and we even talk internally between the three of us, we really say, are we moving towards or away from those goals? But there are some times that we intentionally pump the brakes and say, we're not really going there, but we're doing that because we don't want it to be a factory. We don't want it to be in and out. What we find enjoyment in is getting to talk to our patients. And although we need to know those goals and be cognizant of the business aspects, we don't want to lose that feel. We don't want to burn out employees. We want people to enjoy what they do and be successful at the same time. So having to strike that balance and finding the best ways to do it, sometimes a challenge.
Yeah.
There's no statistic on personability, unfortunately, because I think if there was one, then we would be off the chart.
Some days.
I do.
It depends on the day you catch me, right? I'm probably the most variable there.
So, we talked earlier, I mentioned like really like at the very beginning when we first started talking about Allie, and I say her name because she's been in like some of our videos and so I can, but Miss Karen Leon, and she and Allie have like a huge bond over the sisterhood of their sorority. But when we were talking, she was here this week visiting, and when we were talking, like, she's been a patient for 14 years. And so she's followed us. It started at like Salons by JC, a place we had in Mobile. And then we came here, and she's came here. But also along with that, you know, we have treated her son, her daughter, her best friend, and all the people. And those are the type relationships that you want to build that grow business that will hopefully be here in another 14 or 15 years.
I love that. When I was treating this Karen this week, she was saying, she's like, she was telling me, you know, how long she's been seeing you guys. And she's like, it's so crazy to think about like how me and you met. She was like, it was like it was destiny. She's like, you're meant to be here because I was meant to meet you. And like, how the hell was I going to meet you? And now we like I go to her tailgate like when we're in Tuscaloosa for football games together. And it's just crazy, like small world.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. We're going to finish up podcast for the day. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Beauty and the Brain. We look forward to seeing you all next week.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.